Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. I'm C.A. Brooks, and you are listening to the Friday Morning Show on 1-2 Radio, where we talk about A Course in Miracles and generally spirituality, but our platform is definitely A Course in Miracles. So I hope that you are a student or that this is at least something that you're interested in. And if you're listening live today, this is August 3rd, 2018. And on today's show, we are going to be looking at the introduction to part two of the workbook for students, because we're looking forward to that section because, as many of you know, the workbook is actually divided into two parts. And in the first part, we're really learning how to look at and let go of the ego. But now our training changes a little bit. And so in part two, there is a fairly lengthy introduction. And for those of you who may have started this, like thousands of people across the world, maybe millions, every single year, they start doing the workbook lessons on January 1st. So if you're one of those people, or if you know, if you start on January 1st and you're doing one lesson a day, then you'll get to part two on August 9th. So right now you're doing the review, but you're ready to do part two on August 9th with lesson 220. So last week on the show, we played a lot of excerpts from Ken Wapnick talking about the introduction, because it's just, I love listening to him talk about it because it's such a good summary. It's, you know, how Ken is. He's just so, you know, he just puts it in these very, very concrete terms that are easy to understand, easy for me to, like, take away the message. Like, I remember one of the things that he had said on the recording was something like, you know, guys, your ego is like an island. And the idea here is to get in the water and swim to the other shore, to swim to the right mind, you know, to follow the prompting of the Holy Spirit and to swim to the other island. And that's not exactly how he said it. He said, but, you know, don't wallow. The idea here isn't to go, oh, my God, here's the ego, and just spend all your time looking at the ego. He said, start swimming and swim to the other side. Well, that's an image that for me really sticks there. You know, it's like, and I understand that. I resonate with that. So I love listening to what he has to say. But I also want to hear what Susan Dugan has to say. And she is my guest today. But back to that show, by the end of the show, in the chat room over on Facebook, I will post the link to last week's recording. Because if you missed that show, you may want to go back and listen to what Ken had to say. And I thought, even though you can always go to the archives, you go to the on-demand section on our radio website, I thought that might make it a little bit easier. So like I said, during the show at some point, I will go ahead and post that over on our Facebook page. And speaking of our Facebook page, I would like to invite anybody who would like to join us over there. Many of you know that we do have the chat room, you know, up and running with comments and questions during the live shows here on 1-2 Radio. And if you're not familiar with that, all you have to do is go to the radio website, which is 1-2radio.com. And what you do is you look at the navigation page, pane, I always say page, on the pane that is on the left side of the page. And all you do is click on chat. And when you do, it automatically takes you over to Facebook where you can ask to join the group. And Scott Weaver is our producer today, and he'll let you in. And then you can join the people that are already there. And I want to say hello to Renee and to Greg. Thanks for being here. And Charlene, it's always great to see people coming into the room and, you know, just getting settled with their coffee or their tea or their snack or whatever they're going to do, and just, you know, kind of spending this time together. I think, you know, it's just, for me, that's such a good feeling. Even though we are separated by space, you know, we're all together in this. So thank you for joining me. And as I said, Susan Dugan is here today, and we are going to talk about this introduction. And many of you know Susan. She's an author. She writes a lot on forgiveness. She writes a blog. She teaches in Colorado. She facilitates Course in Miracles studies, etc. So welcome, Susan. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Well, and you know what? I was kind of thinking as I was going through this section, I don't even remember exactly how we met. But one of the things I do remember, I don't know if Mark Husson told me about you maybe, or somebody referred me over to the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center. But in any case, I got a hold of your name. And it was years ago, and I was doing a Course in Miracles show, but the format was a little bit different than this one. So what I was doing is I was interviewing different people and then playing the recordings during the show. And all of a sudden, when I was rereading this the other day, I had this distinct memory of the very first time I ever talked to you. You brought up something in this section.
Yeah, probably so.
And I thought, you know, I'm not sure that would constitute coming around full circle. And I couldn't remember what you said, but I do remember thinking that you are the one that brought it up. And you specifically said, this is the introduction to part two. And it was so meaningful to you at that point in your life. And you were talking about it. And all of a sudden I thought, whoa, I remember that. But it was years ago. I don't remember the rest of the conversation. And like I said, I don't even remember exactly how I got a hold of you or how we met.
Right. Well, I do think it was through Mark, probably. And you did interview me right after my first book, I think, was coming out or had come out or something like that. About A Course in Miracles, about the, you know, trying to live a living a forgiving life, learning to practice this in our lives. And but I did probably talk about this because this was a really significant section for me a few years into my work with the Course, because I just remember coming to this section and, you know, feeling like I was, you know, having a hard time grasping living this, you know, that it was difficult, that the whole idea of turning, you know, the purpose of our lives around to really taking 100% responsibility for all of the things that seem so troubling in our lives, and really, you know, getting reversing what we're doing in our relationships, and really, really seeing that, you know, the ways in which we are, it really doesn't have anything to do with the other person, you know, that the blame and projection that we're doing is really just an outside picture of an inner condition. That's pretty hard to swallow. And it, you know, our egos resist it terribly. And so we, you know, we can have a pretty tumultuous time with this course because we're sort of unconsciously fighting it so much. And I think I was in one of those states when I first read this, and I found myself really in tears at feeling such gratitude for this section, because there's a place in paragraph 6, I think it is, where he says, "I am so close to you, we cannot fail. Mm-hmm. Father, we give these holy times to you in gratitude to him who taught us how to leave the world of sorrow in exchange for its replacement given us by you. We look not backward now, we look ahead and fix our eyes upon the journey's end." And it goes on in that vein, but that phrase or sentence, "I am so close to you, we cannot fail," for some reason just really, and it still does, it really resonated with me on a, you know, beyond words, beyond, you know, as meeting the longing, the need of every heart that we have for this love that seems so missing in our lives, that, you know, that we learn through the course that we deliberately think we threw away when we believed that we ran away from home, ran away from heaven, separated from our source. And that longing that we feel, you know, that sense of that that love is somehow irreplaceable. We keep trying to seek and not finding substitutes for that love in our lives, all the while feeling this kind of guilty sense of, you know, that nothing I do is really authentic and loving, and that you know, I feel unloved and I feel unloving, and it's just not working out. And so that "I am so close to you, we cannot fail" was felt like such a promise to me that I was going in the right direction, and that I was really heavily supported, you know, that I wasn't alone. And for the first time, really, and I think that we all feel on some level when we're, you know, we don't face it really within ourselves, but everyone here feels really lost and alone, as Lesson 182 says, you know, "I will be still an instant and go home." It talks about that child within us all that comes here and feels so alien and lost, and, you know, has this constant throb that just reminds it that something's missing. And so anyway, this phrase felt to me like what I, you know, it was reassurance that even though it seemed like I was failing as a course student, that I cannot fail, and that my teacher was with me, that our teacher is with us all, and that we just need to take the little steps to do this practice and not really worry about the immediate seeming success or not try to judge it, but to just really trust in the process and in our teacher and in the fact that we are moving back up the ladder. Separation seemed to lead us down toward the love that seemed to have been so missing within us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know what was kind of going through my mind is, you know, and I think for everybody, they just have to kind of embrace it the way that they can or whatever makes sense to them. But this is the image that was coming to me is that, you know, even within the course, sometimes they talk about going up or down a ladder. But it seems to me that it's not so much of a vertical or it's one step in front of the others. Like, for instance, every time I get angry or every time I just totally lose my cool, so to speak, lose my peace of mind, which is, you know what, once an hour maybe? Well, you know, it's easy to then say, okay, I'm at the very bottom again. I'm going from zero. But you know what? That's not true.
No.
And the reason it's not true is, and this is the image that all of a sudden came to me, because I used to do a lot of dance. And, you know, you try a particular move, like let's say in ballet, you're trying to do a particular kind of pirouette or something, and you fall and you fall and you fall, or you fail. You're not doing it right. But every single time you try it, you get better at doing it. And right. So there is something about, you know, the more you practice this, instead of seeing, okay, I'm going from ground zero again, in some ways, yeah, you are going from ground zero, but you've got the experience, you've got the practice. And so all of a sudden you realize making that turn, looking back to the Holy Spirit, looking back to the right mind, you know, turning your face away from the ego, all of a sudden is a little bit easier.
Right.
You know, it's like you do have muscle memory or something that you're not, at least for me, it doesn't feel like I'm going from totally ground zero because now I know there is another way.
Absolutely. And the, you know, the practice is cumulative. The undoing that's happening through this practice is removing guilt that we're not even aware is there. So we become more able to practice by practicing, you know. When we're
right.
When we've chosen the ego, I think what's tricky is that when we've chosen the ego, we become more sensitive to the pain of what it feels like when we've chosen the ego. So where we're in those states of resistance, the intensity of it can feel really, you know, feel like we're back at ground zero because it's so intense.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're more able to sort of confront it, you know, to realize that this is really hurting me. And but that's really what motivates us to spend less time there. And you know, to choose more quickly. And as you said, we're aware that we have a choice more and more. And we really do, you know, the course spends a lot of time in the manual talking about the development of trust. And that's what this is all of, this practice, throughout this practice, that trust is being built, that muscle is being strengthened. And the muscle, you know, the habit of choosing the ego is being disabled in some ways, you know,
mm-hmm.
through the practice. And so, you know, I think, yes, that it implies throughout the course, Jesus is implying that this is a process, this is a practice. And, you know, he describes it as a journey, he describes it, and it's not really linear. The development
right.
of trust is not really linear, even though it talks about the stages of it as numbered stages. It's not really like that. It's, you know, we can be at various points in this. It's really all happening simultaneously, and we can't
right.
grasp that in our, you know, our very limited seeming bodily human state. But we don't have to grasp it. That's the beauty of this. The practice is really all that's called for. And the practice is simply questioning whenever we are in that state that you were talking about of wanting, you know, losing it with someone, wanting to you know, somebody just said something to us, or did something, or, you know, something, we're involved in something with our husband or our parent or our kid or our boss, or, you know, one of our special relationships, that it's just this recurring theme where they just, you know, they keep doing what they do. This is just so irritating. Right. And, you know, and we're tempted, and we find ourselves, you know, becoming angry and frustrated and, or anxious or whatever. You know, it's the practice is simply to gently remind ourselves that we're wrong about the cause, that it really has nothing to do with what we think it has, you know, with the person or the situation that we think is the cause, and that it's always a result of a choice that we're making in the mind first. It had nothing to do, and then project it outward, you know, then needed to see it as an outside picture of that inner condition because it was too uncomfortable to see it for what it was. And so we just have to, you know, have to acknowledge that we're wrong, that maybe I'm wrong, I'm not upset for the reason I think, lesson five, and then to that automatically opens the door to remembering lesson 34, which is I could see peace instead of this, because, you know, nothing outside me has the power to take my peace away, and if I'm letting it, if it is taking my peace away, then it's because I've chosen to let it, and mm-hmm. I've done that as a defense against the, you know, the belief that I am guilty in the mind, choosing the ego, which is the represents that part of my mind that believes that the separation is real, and I constantly deserve to be in conflict and deserve to be punished. You know, someone must pay for that real crime of separating from God. And right. If it's not, you know, it's got to be me or them, and we want to see them as the villains so that it doesn't have to be me. I mean, that's
right.
We're always trying to set up situations like that, and it's unconscious, you know, and we don't, it's not, what we learn through the practice and the journey is that it's not, we don't, you know, we shouldn't blame ourselves for it either, because this is all unconscious, and what we're trying to do is to make it more conscious so that we can choose again and discover that we're our true innocence. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that discovery has to also include the other person.
Right.
And that's the part that we have to turn out, you know, we have to allow, we have to ask for help from our teacher, from Jesus as our teacher, Holy Spirit as our teacher, the reason, the right mind as our teacher, the part of our mind that's sane, to show us how it sees the person, the situation. And it sees it as completely, you know, as completely harmless, as completely innocent. And, you know, that's how we discover that we are completely innocent. And we do make that shift. We see that it has nothing to do with them. And compassion, you know, even if the person is acting out in a way that's very upsetting or troubling in the world's view, we will be aware that that's coming from the same hurt place within them that I have within me. And mm-hmm. so we will react with love, even if that means, you know, having to do something in the world that seems, you know, get a restraining order or do something,
yeah.
You know, or whatever, you know, leave the situation or whatever we're called to do. But it will be coming from a loving place and not a place of condemnation and, you know, trying to guilt the other person further into something that really doesn't exist in truth.
Right. Well, and I was reminded of, you know, because I always, it's kind of ironic because when I first studied the course, I refused to listen to anybody else. I mean, I just wanted to read it for myself. And like Mark kept saying, oh, no, you've got to listen to Ken Wapnick or read his stuff. I said, nope, not until I've read the whole thing. I'm reading the whole thing, and then I will listen to somebody else's opinion. And I'm sure that came from my upbringing of, you know, Catholicism partially, where you never read the Bible. You listened to what the priest had to say, or the nuns or catechism or whatever. And I just said, I really need to do this for myself. I need to see what it says before I get somebody else's opinion. But now, of course, I mean, I just can't get enough of Ken Wapnick, you know. Just love, because, I just love what he has to say. And so one of the things that he was saying in this particular section, I remember, was the goal is to learn how to be mentally quiet, mm-hmm. even when our bodies are busy.
Right.
And, you know, that's an intriguing thing. And we I think we all understand what that means. But being able to do that is something entirely different. Mm-hmm. You know, so once again, as Ken often says, be normal. You've got to take care of those responsibilities, whether or not that means, you know, getting up and getting the kids off to school, fixing lunches, or you're driving the carpool, or maybe you're going to work and you're, you know, you're on public transportation, whatever it is, you know, our we go on with our lives, but the goal is to learn to be mentally quiet.
Right.
And I thought, whoa, you know, I mean, and that is it. It's like, totally the perception of what we think is going on. We come from a completely different place, you know, a quiet place of letting the information, in a sense, just kind of channel through us instead of trying to do it ourselves, instead of trying to figure it out.
Right. You know? And I think that unlike other paths that, you know, it's not so much, there are spiritual paths that are very worthy that do make mental quiet a goal, kind of, and have various methods for achieving that through meditation or body work or you know, whatever.
Right.
But and they're all can be very valuable. But the course is different in the sense that quiet center, that stately calm within that the course talks about, is the quality of the right mind.
Yes.
It's the quality of our true nature. It's what's just there once we turn away from the ego. So when, you know, that is the value of this idea of having the two teachers in the mind, the quality of Jesus' Holy Spirit, which is simply that symbol of the part, that memory of the part of our mind that never took the tiny mad idea of separation seriously, that retains the sense of our wholeness and our sameness and our saneness and our innocence, and loves us unconditionally, loves all unconditionally. That voice is quiet. It doesn't tell us, it doesn't give us specific advice. It doesn't tell us to, you know, that we have to do anything. It just waits for us. You know, this at the end of this introduction, it goes to one of the summaries in the second part of the workbook of what is forgiveness, and it talks about how forgiveness is still and quietly does nothing. It merely looks and waits and judges not. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's that quiet, that solitude of our true self that we run from like crazy all the time, you know.
Right.
We're trying to flee that. We think we overthrew that. And yet, even as we run away from that, it is all we seek. You know, it's that the longing that we feel constantly that never goes away, that sense of feeling alien here, all of that is a direct result of the belief that we actually ran away from that stately calm within. And so if once we, you know, through the practice of forgiveness, once we are able to, you know, routinely, consistently practice this by questioning to the best of our ability as gently and without judgment as we can, that, you know, as we're becoming reactive and upset, to pause and to remind ourselves that the cause is not in the other person or the other situation, the outside situation. The cause is a choice that I was making in my mind because I was afraid. Mm-hmm. Again. And but that peace is still there, that the quiet, you know, is still there. That mere practice opens the door to the stately calm within. And at some point through that practice, we make those shifts to the holy instant in which we experience that quiet, even amidst our busy doings, as it says in the section in the text, I Need Do Nothing. That talks about the quiet center, you know, that even as we can remain in that quiet center, even as we go about all the craziness of our days. And let's face it, in the Western world, we live pretty busy lives.
Yes.
But it is possible. And, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that this happens all the time, but I do find from this course, I, you know, I'll tell you right now, I mean, I'm just coming back from, my mother passed away 2 weeks ago, and, she was in home, it was expected, she was in home hospice, and but I had to travel back to upstate New York. It was a very grueling kind of trip. It is under the best of circumstances. It just requires a lot of connections to get to this particular place, including, you know, a couple plane connections and cars and ferries and that sort of thing. So it's a long trip. Yeah. And my husband and I went back, and my daughter was flying back from Seattle to try to make it. And, you know, she could only come for a short amount of time too, because of her work situation. But, but during that whole time, I also had an underlying health condition that flared up a few days before. And so I was really physically challenged as well. But I have to tell you, the course really got me through 3 days that were extremely challenging physically, emotionally, and mentally, and, you know, with very little sleep, with very little food that I was able to eat, with, you know, all facing people that I hadn't seen, in some of them 35 years, you know, in the Catholic Church, in a full mass and awake, and things that are no longer my belief system. And it turned out to be an amazingly present and kind experience, which I never really thought possible. And really, I do feel it was because I was able to connect with, you know, that Jesus, that quiet center. I had that sense of, I am so close to you, we cannot fail, of our teacher with me, within me, beside me, for, you know, just the strength of our right mind. And there wasn't this constant conflict of, you know, I mean, funerals are challenging under the best of circumstances. There's a lot of emotions, and mm-hmm. people, you know, are not always on their best behavior.
Yeah.
and there was some of that, although, you know, overall, I mean, it just changed the whole quality of the experience for me. And ended up, you know, I think that's an extreme example, and maybe sometimes it's easier when we're in extreme situations to really give it up, you know.
Right.
But it's possible. I mean, to less dramatic degrees, I experienced that a lot through this practice. And that doesn't mean that we don't have resistance. That doesn't mean that it can't be really hard at times, that we don't fight it, that we don't. But it becomes more and more routine to admit that we're wrong, and that we don't want to go through this the same way we have in the past, you know, and that mm-hmm. there's a new way, there's a better way, and of relating here, and that way is very practical. It's very, you will be, you know, you will be led, informed. You'll be quiet within. And there won't be the expectation and the need for things to go a particular way. And what a relief, you know, or for people mm-hmm. to be a particular way, or a sense of neediness. You know, all of that can recede in the background when we are willing to just say, my way is not working. And, you know, I want to align with my right mind. I want the peace of God, you know. Mm-hmm. And if we can mean it for a moment, we have it.
Right.
So, you know, it's, I mean, this course works.
Yes.
You know? I mean, which is, you know, cause we talk about it so often and as in terms of its difficulty but it does over time, it does require consistent effort in the sense that you have to apply it, you know, just reading it is beautiful, but it doesn't really help undo the guilt that we're not aware of. You know, the practice is what does that, and the practice will bring us the peace that we're looking for. You know, and it's a gradual process. We're too fearful to go to it directly, but it over time, it really, you know, we are making progress.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I remember one thing Ken said, you know, well, he said it a number of times, but certainly it comes out like, you're so close to me, we cannot fail. Ken had said, God is fully present to us.
Yes.
It is us. It's we. We have chosen not to be fully present to him.
Absolutely.
And that is such an incredible statement. And it kind of goes back to something I think about a lot as I'm talking to people, and what I would say is, you know, you almost see them, they're flailing around and this isn't working and this isn't working and I don't have this and I don't have this and it's dark and I can't see. And it's like, just open the curtains, you know, or just recharge the cell phone. You know, it to me, it's like electricity sometimes. It's like, guys, the phone isn't broken or this isn't broken. Just go to the power source, you know, just go back. And, you know, nobody took it away. You just need to kind of stop for a minute in the frenzy of all this and go back to the source. And like I said, I think we see it in our everyday lives in silly things like, oh, my darn cell phone, it won't stay charged, or this happens or that happens. And it's, and like I said, to me, a lot of times it's just people coming up with all these excuses, myself included, about what's going on. And it's like, well, did you ever stop to think, you know, all you have to do is like open the curtains and it won't be dark anymore? You
right.
know? And I mean, they're silly things, but if we stop and listen to what we're complaining about and on and on and on so often, it's like God never left. God is fully present to us in every single moment. We can go back to the source. It never moved away. It's only us. We're the ones that moved away. We're the ones who are not looking at it. We're the ones who think that we can be distracted by all these other little things going on.
Right, right, exactly. It's much easier than we make it. and you know, all of the excuses that we come up with, you know, it really is, again, it's possible, no matter what's happening around you, to be in touch with love, you know, to be in touch with the peace of God. It's the ego is always, always ranting about how it's impossible, that we have to get our lives in order first, you know.
Right.
I've got too much to take care of, too many practical things that I have to take care of. I have too many crises, you know, there's too many hemorrhages that I've got to put tourniquets on in my life. And, you know, that's really the opposite of what the Course is saying. The Course is saying, no matter what's going on in your life, you know, the work is done in the mind. It can happen anywhere. It's completely accessible right now, right here, no matter what seems to be happening out there. And if you are willing to choose not to hurt yourself again in this moment, to choose against, you know, siding with the ego's dire predictions of what's going to happen if you don't micromanage every little piece of it immediately, then you can go through this. The quality of your experience can completely change. The experience itself may or may not change, but the quality of your experience can completely change. You can go through it peacefully, presently, quietly. You know, adagio, as Ken used to say. He always liked to use the musical terms, but, you know, gently, with presence, with intention, with Jesus beside you. And you know, it isn't fraught with conflict when we make that decision. It's we just take the next step, as you were saying before. You know, there's a wonderful section in the Course, I can't remember where it is, but where he talks about together we hold the lamp that dispels the darkness. And I always have this image of Jesus, you know, kind of just beside me with a little lantern. And, you know, you can see only the steps right in front of you, but that's all you need to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the past and the future really don't have the power that we're giving them. They're actually not even real. So, you know, why do we keep focusing on them, you know? And it's always, I mean, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say the reason, I mean, is always because we're trying to make the sin of separation real, the past sin, the seeming past sin of separation real, and the fear of punishment that we think we deserve real, and that we have to try to, you know, somehow avoid. So, but if we're, but in the present, salvation is present. It's the step we take right now. You know, and which teacher are we walking with through this?
Right. Well, and what was kind of flashing in my mind is, it just, for so many of us, it always goes back to the idea that even though spiritually we are innocent, we never did anything, the separation didn't happen, but we spend our lives creating all of these different scenarios in which we are the innocent victim and there's somebody to blame.
Absolutely.
You know, if only, you know, it's your fault. It's your fault that this happened. I was totally clueless and you took advantage of me. Yeah. And I mean, I'm kind of laughing because all you have to do is turn on the news.
Yes.
And you will hear major, I mean, in fact, I was kind of laughing the other day listening to the synopsis of a trial that's going on. And the whole defense is he didn't know it was even happening. You know, and it's like, oh my God, you know, it's the kindergartner on the, you know, playground. Once again, I didn't know. I had no idea. I'm the innocent victim here.
Right,
you know, I'm clueless. And, you know, when I think sometimes about how much energy we put into doing that in our lives, always looking for a scapegoat, always looking for, if I could just put this blame outside myself somewhere, then I will be the innocent victim. And yet, I don't know about you, but when I do that, I end up feeling really powerless. I end up feeling really empty and powerless. And then it makes me wonder, why would you want to put the blame on somebody else? Why don't you just go, yeah, I was mistaken. I made a mistake here and I want to correct it. I want to go back. I want to look back the other way. I want to swim to the other shore.
Right. And the correction isn't, we don't have to go back and fix the past. The correction is right now. You know, that's the beautiful thing, too. And we don't have to, you know, it's simultaneous. So so it's really right now, at any moment, we can make that decision. And as you were saying, when, you know, it doesn't work. The ego's strategy of projecting the guilt on someone else and then out there and then seeing it as an incoming attack to justify that we're the innocent victims, it doesn't work. It ends up making us feel powerless or pretty much eventually guilty again. You know, it's a maladaptive solution to a non-existent problem. That was Ken's, famous description of what we're doing, that he actually said before he died that he wanted to be remembered by. You know, if you're going to remember him by anything, that's remember that. And he said that jokingly because he has no attachment. He never had an attachment to anything that he did. But you know, in content, that really says it all. The problem with projection, if it worked, you know, that'd be one thing, but it doesn't even work.
Right.
The guilt never goes away, you know? So that's why we end up finally saying there has to be a better way. That's what brought the scribing of the course in, you know? All this frantic trying to, you know, portray, to determine victims and victimizers as if there's some big difference in the two, because, you know, we just trade off what we're doing. It doesn't, all victimizers believe that they were first victimized, you know? So we're all the same. We all have the same hidden ego agenda. We express it in a lot of different forms. And you know, and some seem a lot, you know, it seems as though there's a hierarchy of atrocities out there, but that's a lie too. That's the way we set it up so that we can keep, you know, keep trying to make sense of something that's meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all a projection of the meaningless belief that separation really happened and that, you know, someone must pay. And it's a lie.
Which kind of brings us back to this introduction of the whole first section of the lessons are kind of teaching us that it's a lie, giving us practical experience that it's a lie. And I want to read paragraph 9 and maybe 10 from this introduction. It said, "We had a wish that God would fail to have the son whom he created for himself. We wanted God to change himself and to be what we would make of him. And we believed that our insane desires were the truth. Now, we are glad that this is all undone, and we no longer think illusions are true. The memory of God is shimmering across the wide horizons of our minds." Now, that line, I know he keeps saying, don't pay attention to the words, but what a visual. The memory of God is shimmering across the wide horizons of our minds. A moment more, and it will rise again. A moment more, and we who are God's sons are safely home where he would have us be. Now is the need for practice almost done, for in this final section we will come to understand that we need only call to God, and all temptations disappear. Instead of words, we need but feel his love. Instead of prayers, we need but call his name. Instead of judging, we need but be still and let all things be healed. We will accept the way God's plan will end as we receive the way it started. Now it is complete. This year has brought us to eternity. And, you know, once again, looking at, for those of you who have done the first part and now you're going into part two, it is interesting because the lessons are significantly different. They all have kind of this first person prayer almost, and then just this encouragement to sit quietly and God's presence dawn. You know, let it shimmer across the horizons of your minds.
Right. It's a very, the first part of the workbook is really the experiential part of the undoing of the practice of forgiveness, introducing us to that, to that. The second part of the workbook is really devoted to offering us moment meditations of direct experience with the love that we are. I have to mention that I really struggled for a long time with the second part of the workbook. I mean, it felt to me like it might as well have been, you know, written in Martian or something. It just was like, what is this?
It's so boring.
I was so afraid of it, I think. And those two paragraphs that you read that are so beautiful and reassuring and really speak to the end of the journey, you know. Mm-hmm. But you know, we have to remember when he says, now the time is over, and, you know, he's presumably talking to people that this is their first time through the workbook, you know, initially anyway. And you know, that's a very, it certainly probably is not most people's experience the first time through the workbook, or even the seventh or eighth time through the workbook, that they're almost to the end of the journey, that they hardly ever have any forgiveness, you know, issues anymore. I mean, but we have to remember again that, you know, Jesus, Holy Spirit, has a very different view of time than we do, knows that time is really, you know, it's over. It was over long ago, and that we all made it home, you know. So the second part of the workbook and this section itself are giving us that pep talk, giving us that, you know, kind of, you know, you are loved. You are so loved, and you can be still a moment and open to it. You don't have to be afraid. I'm right here. I'm so close to you. We cannot fail. I will be with you as you go through the second part of the workbook. So you don't have to be afraid of the word God, even, you know, which can be very frightening to some of us. I mean, the God of many people's childhoods was a punishing God.
Right.
We were confronted with a lot of scary images in the Bible, even though there were some beautiful passages there. You know, there's a lot of the content is very dualistic and very, you know, very much ego driven. And you know, all about one or the other, and you know, sin being real and punishment being required. So he's giving us a way of entering this second part of the workbook, telling us that he's right here there with us, and that we can spend these moments with him.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, at the end of the workbook, the very last lesson, I shouldn't say they pull the rug out from underneath you, but they say, this isn't the end, it's only the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, what?
Right.
But if you think about it in here again, part two, you know, I feel like in part one, it's much more structured. You know, spend 5 minutes doing this, you know, being a little more specific. And now, you know, it's like he's acknowledging, you know what, do you get it now? All you need to do is come and spend time with me. Come spend time with me, you know, and they suggest in this introduction some time in the morning and some time at night, mm-hmm. whatever makes you happy. But train yourself to come and spend time with me.
Right.
And it's not about whether or not you did the lesson correctly. It's not about the exactness of it. It's about, have you trained yourself to come and spend time with me? Because that's what we're really trying to do, is train our minds to do that. And, you know, now we'll go on together because, as you said, you are so loved. I am constantly here. I am here for you. And so just come and spend time with me. And as you do that, we will continue to walk this path together. So then when you get all, you know, upset like CA does and totally loses it, then you remember, oh, I can just come and spend some time. There is another way. There's another way. I remember I can feel differently. And, you know, that turning point itself is just so huge, to remember that there is another way instead of feeling hopeless and helpless.
That's right. There's another way. There's another teacher. There's a stately calm within. There's a quiet center. You know, you're not just out there, you know, a target for all of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And part of what you're saying is, you know, it talks about in the manual, how does the teacher of God spend his day, or how should the teacher of God spend his day, about structuring our day so that we do spend time in you know, we make our intention in the morning to be with Jesus and to make our purpose to see everyone and everything with him, to remember his presence, to experience his unconditional love for us and everyone, you know. And we try to do that before we go to bed, and we try to check in throughout the day. And, you know, what our biggest reminders to check in are when we're upset. You know, mm-hmm. that's when we need to practice forgiveness and go back to, you know, Jesus doesn't see it this way, right? Holy Spirit doesn't see it this way, experience it this way. So, you know, I must be wrong. I can't really be upset for the reason I think, because it has nothing to do with anything out there. This is a choice of, you know, I forgot my teacher. I left that quiet center. You know, I ran away from home again.
Yep.
But, you know, I can go back right now. Mm-hmm. I'm not alone. You know, he is so close to me, we cannot fail.
Yes.
And our experience with the Course, our journey with the Course, is really also a journey of learning what it means to be intimate with our teacher. You know, we're growing into intimacy with that presence in our mind. And over time, we discover that we are that presence in our mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, eventually we grow up that we don't need the big brother, and we incorporate that. We gradually begin to integrate that within our own mind. And the split heals, you know, the split mind heals. But, you know, that's a process.
Yes. But I would here again come back full circle maybe and just say that, at least in my experience, I think especially in the beginning, it was like climbing the ladder. And every time I fell to the bottom, I thought, oh, my God, 6 months of work down the drain.
And that's the ego talking, right?
It is the ego. But then what you quickly realize is, oh, I can kind of pick up where I left off. But I've got to do the most important thing, which is change my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've just got to remember that there isn't, I mean, that alone to me is always the striking thing. There is another way. There is another way. In fact, the other thing that I've been really focusing on lately, because it just seems like it keeps coming up, for it comes up in my work, it comes up in family, and that is, and I need to look this up, I can't remember where it is, but there's a statement that, has it ever occurred to you that, you know, when you're talking about problems, has it ever occurred to you that you removed yourself from the solution?
Mm-hmm.
And I have used that so often lately because I recognize that when I or a client or a family member or somebody, when we feel hopeless and helpless, it's because we really think there is no solution. And how different is it if we go, no, there is a solution. I've just put something between me and that solution. But even believing there is a solution automatically raises your energy, automatically makes you feel more hopeful. All of a sudden you're turning towards, yeah, let me move away these distractions. Let me move away these obstacles versus that there just is no answer. There is no hope. There is no answer. There is no happiness. And, you know, that to me is a significant thing to go, no, there is. I just can't see it at this moment.
Right. And I mean, from the person's perspective, the solution is always the same and always in the mind.
Yes.
It's very consistent. You know, I mean, there's in the world, it can certainly seem like there aren't, you know, there's no solutions that don't create other problems. Often.
Right.
And, you know, that's the way we set it up. But within the mind, the solution of forgiveness works for everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the taking responsibility back to the mind, recognizing that nothing outside my mind has the power to take my peace away, and that peace and love that I'm really looking for always and really is the solution to every problem, the need of every heart, is there right now for me if I join it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But I've got to be willing to make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only decision, whatever decisions in the world, you know, if there's anything that would be helpful in the world, it will flow from that, but it won't be a sense of conflict. We won't be attached to the outcome. It won't be a big deal.
Yes. Yeah. But in any case, that's what I've been thinking about lately. And I think especially because, I mean, I am a person that I'm not big into affirmations, but I guess I am big into words. And what I've been hearing people say lately is I'm screwed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, just stop. I just kind of stop them in their tracks. And I go, no, that is not the truth. That's what you're feeling, but that is not the truth. You know, don't believe that there is no hope, there is no help, there is nothing you can do about this. You know, please quit saying that.
Right.
So, you know, it's just been, I mean, and there again, I just pay attention to what I'm hearing. I'm paying attention to what people think. And, you know, so I'm putting it out there. Yeah, there is a solution. And according to the Course in Miracles, that's it. We will continue to create problems and we will make them all look different. But they all have the same solution. And that solution all has to do with changing our minds, you know, recognizing, well, my approach has been wrong and there is a better way. There is another way. So, Susan, thank you so much for coming today and for joining the conversation. And, you know, I just say I hope that, you know, you and your family will be in my thoughts and hope that, you know, you will just continue to walk that journey and find peace of mind within it and find those sweet moments.
Thank you.
You know, that are going on in your life. And I would ask you also, do you have anything that you'd like to announce today?
No, the only thing maybe is, you know, a plug always for the Foundation for A Course in Miracles. They did announce this past week that they, which some of us already knew, but.
Yes, they're moving.
I was shocked. Yes. Well, no, they decided that some time ago, but the timing of it was, you know, not really disclosed until very just now. But yes, they will be moving to Henderson, Nevada, which is Gloria's son has become involved with the administration of the foundation, and his family is there.
And that's not very far from Las Vegas, is it?
It's outside Las Vegas, I believe. Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
So, I mean, I'm kind of excited because even
you have family there.
I have family there. And I thought, you know, I had never been able to visit the foundation in California, which I regret. But in Henderson, it's going to be close, although I assume they're not going to continue to do those in-person classes, or are they?
There's nothing scheduled for 2018. Whether they resume at some point, I can't, you know, I don't think that's been decided. But yeah, they will. I assume that the bookstore and all of that will still be there, and that you can visit. So anyway, that there's news about that. They have a new website as well that you might want to visit. There's still a lot of, you know, resources available on the website. Their bookstore is there. There's all kinds of free downloads and you know, YouTubes and all kinds of. All of the resources that have always been there and some new ones. So, yeah, yeah, it's that's a big change, but you know, there's still foundation still is strong, and we'll just be in a different location.
Okay, but when you say a new website, it's still the www.facin.org.
Yes, it's still the same. It's
but the website itself has been, yeah, it's
correct.
Still
it's just been revised. They've rebuilt the website, and so there's new features. It looks different, and I think they just were really trying to update it and make it a little more accessible and current.
Okay. All right, well, good. Well, you know, like I said, I'm kind of excited. I think you and I should go out there and stay with one of my siblings.
Trip.
Yeah, I have like four siblings out there. So we ought to go out there and we could stay with my siblings or, you know, go visit the foundation. I would love to do that.
Yes, that'd
and,
be
fun. I mean, interesting change. I was very shocked when I got that email from them about that going on. But I think it'll be a good change. That'll be pretty cool. So, yes. Susan, thank you so much. And
thank
one
you.
Other announcement. I did make it last week, but we are shaking some things up on 1-2 Radio. So by the 17th of August, I think is the target date, we are going to move the timing of this show 1 hour. So instead of being at 8 a.m. Pacific, it's going to be at 9 a.m. Pacific. Now, if that changes, I will certainly let you all know, but just watch for that change coming in a couple of weeks to the Friday morning show. And I just want to thank everybody for being here today. Thanks to all the listeners. Thanks to Scott Weaver, our producer, and thanks to Susan Dugan. So I hope that you will have a good week and, you know, just really think about some of the things that we've talked about today, that there is hope. There is a way to change your mind, and you know, God is so close to us that we truly cannot fail. So you have been listening to the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks with my guest Susan Dugan on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.
To give in such a way that has no end, we are loved.